20 years ago, the first reported cases of what would come to be known as AIDS were published in medical journals. That was in 1981. In 1987, NPR began a series documenting the impact of the first AIDS treatment, AZT. AZT, which inhibits the virus's ability to replicate, proved ineffective, but we didn't know that in 1987, the year we began our visits with Archie Harrison, one of the first patients treated with AZT. NPR's Patricia Naimond presented a series of 8 reports ending on August 8, 1988, the day Archie Harrison died. Archie's partner, Drew Tillotson, was with him when he died. About a month ago, Patricia Naimond traveled to San Francisco, where Drew now lives, to talk about his life after Archie and about the medical and cultural changes that followed Archie's death.
The beginning of a good day, one of 4 walks, and Morris the dog is very excited. It's one of Drew's favorite parts of the day, too. It's peaceful in this park, high on the San Francisco hill.
We can see Berkeley and the bridge and the water and the city.
It was a good decision moving here 10 years ago, a long way from the congestion and concrete of New York City. Drew has settled into a good life, a profession, a new partner, but always there is a certain uneasiness.
I just go about my life, living day to day, doing my thing, working, meeting people, getting together with my friends, and in the background, you know that there is evil lurking.
The evil is HIV. Drew has carried the virus for years. When we first visited him 15 years ago, his partner, Archie Harrison, was struggling with AIDS. At the time, there were no effective treatments, only a new experimental drug called AZT. Archie was one of the first patients to take it. Today, back at home, Drew picks up a photo of Archie, a large 8x10, which sits on a shelf in the bookcase. Archie is young, in his 20s, blonde, handsome, beautiful, piercing eyes.
That's exactly how he met when I looked when I met him. Exactly, that was it. This was the look. I thought he was dashing. I thought he was so handsome. I don't know, sometimes I look at it and I just... It seems like so long ago, like my life is so completely different now from what it was during that period. I mean, especially, God.
In 1986, when NPR decided to profile the progress of an AIDS patient taking AZT, Archie was a natural choice. He was articulate and thoughtful, and he was also an actor, so he wasn't shy about being in the spotlight. Today, Drew and I decide to listen to an excerpt from the first piece we aired with Archie just a few months after his diagnosis with AIDS and not long after he decided to embrace a new way of thinking about life.
I want to be happy right now, right today. It makes it seem like now I might live much longer and will be able to continue living my life more and more this way, and hopefully we'll reach 60, 70, 80. That's what I want. I'd like to be rid of this disease, and I'd like to go on and then have the opportunity to live my life with this new insight, this new vision for years. That idea, that possibility is so exciting that it gives me a lot of strength and courage to go on.
Drew sighs slowly and smiles. Having AIDS did force Archie in a different direction, he says. It gave him a new purpose and passion. During his illness, Archie worked hard to publicize, through his acting and through the NPR series, the difficulties faced by AIDS patients at the time, the hopes they had for effective treatment, and the terrible stigma they lived with. Just 2 years after our series began, Archie's health began to decline dramatically. AZT was not the breakthrough many had hoped for, and it proved unable to stop the progress of the disease. Archie suffered bouts of pneumocystis pneumonia, and he was wasting away. He could no longer eat solid food. A tube was surgically implanted in his stomach to provide him with liquid nutrition. And by the summer of 1988, it was clear Archie's body was failing him.
I'm on a real roller coaster with my emotions. Right now I feel really sad. Feeling close to death so much of the time. And I don't know if that's true or if I'm getting better. Guess I just am not ready to face dying really as much as I thought I was. I feel cheated out of life. I feel like there's still so much inside. Underneath all this, there's this whole person who's screaming to get out, who wants to be a whole person again. And that feels trapped in this body. I feel extremely vulnerable, very needy. And like I said before, just really thankful that there's the people around me that there are, especially Drew. I can't imagine what it must be like to look at it from his point of view.
It's hard. It's not easy. But I wouldn't be anywhere else.
The part that just gets me is when he says, I feel like there's so much inside, you know, that's... And that was so true, you know.
Together, Drew and I recall that time with Archie that summer, one of the hottest in New York in years. There was construction going on outside their tiny one-room studio apartment, jackhammers pounding relentlessly. Inside, it was hot, and there were signs of sickness everywhere. Stacks of nutritional supplement cans lined the walls. A feeding bag on a pole stood inches from the bed. For Archie, his environment had dwindled dramatically, and he moved slowly, delicately, from chair to bed. He was extremely thin and fragile, and Drew says they both knew that this time he would not get better.
He just couldn't physically, he could not rebound, but the spirit, he was struggling, he was angry, he was sad, but yet he still had some sense that there was a part of him that wanted to be well. But at that point, he was so debilitated. And so tied to that feeding tube and so upset. That was awful. It was easily one of the worst times of my life, if not the worst. That period right there where that tape was. That was the most grueling period because we knew the end was kind of inevitable. And that feeding tube was awful.
About 1 month later, on August 8th, 1988, Archie Harrison died. Not long after, Drew got tested to see if he, too, was infected with the AIDS virus. He was, and even though he had suspected that he was HIV positive, it was still devastating news, and only added to the burden Drew felt walking the streets of New York.
All around our apartment was St. Clair's Hospital. If I walked down 9th Avenue, I would see the hospital where he had pneumocystis and nearly died. If I walked north and went up 9th Avenue, towards Columbus Circle, I would pass St. Luke's Hospital where he was last ill. So all around where we lived represented the illness to me. It represented everything that had gone wrong and a lot of heartache.
Drew knew he had to leave New York. He had turned 30, and it felt like a symbol, time to begin a new life. Exactly 1 year after Archie's death, Drew moved to San Francisco. He decided to go to graduate school to become a therapist. It was a goal he threw himself into, taking out loans and immersing himself in the rigors of school.
Peter, hi, Drew.
Today, Drew's psychologist license hangs on a wall in a modern, peaceful office in the Castro area. Drew has a successful, busy practice. He sees about 38 patients every week, most of them gay men. About a quarter of them are HIV positive, like himself. Drew estimates he's been infected with the virus for nearly 20 years now. But he's never been treated for HIV because he's never been sick.
Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and take care of blood pressure.
Okay.
Every 6 months, Drew has a routine medical visit at Kaiser Permanente Medical Center with nurse practitioner Jean Neuhauser.
Sure. Well, I want to look at your lab work, and as usual, it's wonderful.
Oh, good. You looked at it already?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I had a sneak preview.
Drew is one of a handful of HIV-infected individuals, among the 3 to 5% who have never had symptoms of the disease, whose bodies have somehow, miraculously, fought off the virus.
And you and this virus have come into a kind of a coexistence. Right. So that your immune system is not being destroyed by this virus, which destroys the immune system. Why? I don't know, and you don't know, and no one knows.
Yeah.
But it's really great.
Thanks. Yeah. It's cool.
Long-term survivor.
Studies are now being conducted with long-term survivors like Drew, technically called non-progressors because they're infected with HIV, but the virus has not been able to reproduce or damage their immune systems. Researchers are working to figure out why. For his part, Drew knows he's lucky, but he says always in the back of his mind there is the worry, the fear that his luck won't hold out. In fact, even if HIV does begin to destroy his immune system, it's highly unlikely Drew will face the illness and death that Archie did. The world is a very different place today than it was 15 years ago when Archie got sick. San Francisco internist Dr. Lisa Capaldini has been treating AIDS patients since the epidemic began.
If Archie Harrison came to me with his first episode of pneumocystis pneumonia, having never been on any antiretroviral meds to that point, I could guarantee him that we could turn his disease around.
Today, with powerful new drug combinations, Capaldini says HIV is a chronic, manageable disease, the kind of situation Archie Harrison had so desperately longed for.
Were he to come to me today, he could possibly take one pill twice a day, along with some preventative antibiotics. It's a whole new world. It's like kids don't die of strep throat anymore. People with diabetes don't die because they don't have insulin. We can give them insulin. And we now have the ability to calm down this virus, although unfortunately we can't completely eradicate it.
And while the powerful new antiviral medications are clearly life-saving, Capaldini says they are not without problems.
So, for example, this medicine, Crixivan, is a great antiviral, but it's the one you have to take with a lot of water, and it can cause kidney stones. Whereas this drug,
along with nausea, nerve pain, high cholesterol, a redistribution of fat that leaves cheeks hollow and midriffs bulky, these are all side effects of the different medications. And because the drugs only became available 5 years ago, no one knows what the long-term effects might be on the heart, the liver, and pancreas. 48-year-old John Edmiston is on antiviral therapy. He is Drew's new partner.
Is there any espresso left?
Drew and John live in a classic San Francisco Edwardian flat just off Dolores Park. The dining room offers a gorgeous view of the city. Family photographs line a long, freshly painted hallway. There's one of John's mother, a model, on the front page of a magazine. There's a small, bustling kitchen, and outside, a luscious green garden, John's pride.
My first impression of Drew, just seeing him sort of from afar in the chorus at rehearsals and things, was that he was the strong, silent type. So much for first impressions, you know.
John and Drew have been together 10 years now, having met shortly after Drew moved here, 2 years after Archie's death.
There was a quality to Drew that was different. It was, and part of it too, I think, was that you had just come out of not only Archie's death, but you had 3 very significant losses, all very close together. You lost your brother and your father and your lover, all very close together. So you were kind of shell-shocked. And, you know, I think you needed to be treated kind of carefully or gently.
Both John and Drew enthusiastically recall their first date, a walk on the beach, dinner at an Italian restaurant, a movie. Both revealed their HIV status that day. John had been taking AZT. And as Drew fell in love with him, he occasionally worried John might get sick like Archie did. Ultimately, Drew decided to embrace the relationship, but first he had to come to terms with his love and grief for Archie.
I remember I had this dream about Archie. Remember that dream that I had? You know, Archie had, and I had talked before he died about him coming to me in my dreams. And I started dating John. It was only about a month, three or four weeks, a month into it, and I was starting to fall in love with John. And Archie came to me in this dream, and I'll never forget this dream because it was very intense and very vivid. And I was walking in this garden, and Archie came to me in the dream looking very healthy and vibrant. And I touched his hand. I remember holding his hand and saying, "My God, it's you." And I remember squeezing his thumbs and his fingers and realizing that he was really there. And I remember he didn't say anything in the dream. There was no words, but what he was saying was, "It's okay." Basically what the message was, "It's okay to fall in love with John. You can do this." And Archie was very, I'm getting kind of emotional thinking about it. And he just was so, it was so gentle. He just came to me and sort of said, "It's okay." And then he walked away. And then I woke up from the dream and I realized he had done what we said we would do before he died, and that I could fall in love again with John.
Today, Drew and John have a settled-in quality to their relationship. And finally now, after so many years of worrying about sickness and death, both Drew and John have allowed themselves to plan for the future.
I mean, you certainly prioritize your life differently when you think you might die soon. I did not have a 401k. I started very late. I thought, oh my God, I'm going to get old and have no money. I'm going to sleep under a bridge. I actually just started, you know, a few years ago. A big chunk, yeah, to try and catch up, because it looks like I might be around for a while.
But the word "might" still looms large. Both John and Drew carry HIV. So far, both have remained healthy, but John has suffered some side effects from the medications: kidney stones, high cholesterol, a hollowness in his cheeks. So perhaps it's not surprising that surviving the epidemic brings relief, to be sure, but not complete joy. Not for John, and not for Drew.
I mean, to use Archie's word, I feel cheated too. There are times I do have anger about this. It's not frequent, but it's not like, it's what I'm trying to say, it's like living in a body where you're carrying a virus, but you're doing well. So it's like I have both worlds. It's like I have the life of a healthy person, but I carry a virus like an HIV positive person. And I do at times feel cheated that I'm not HIV negative.
In the 70s and early 80s, when Archie and Drew were infected with HIV, no one knew how the disease was spread, and the fear of exactly how was rampant. People worried about toilet seats, about sharing kitchen utensils, and even about shaking hands. Today, it's clear AIDS is not spread that way, but through the transmission of blood and bodily fluids, and that it's not so easy to get. Even so, infection rates are on the rise again in the gay community among younger men. And it's a shock, almost an insult, to older men like Drew and John, who experienced the magnitude of the epidemic.
John, do we have capers? So we're going to do the caper thing, right?
Yeah.
Ending this day, Drew and John entertain two good old friends, Tim Schumann and Dan Callie. Tim and Dan are a bit younger, in their late 30s, but like John and Drew, their memories are forever frozen in the epidemic of the 80s. Though their relationship is strong, Tim and Dan admit that the fear of infection played a role in their commitment to monogamy and to each other. Both are HIV negative.
All right, cheers.
Cheers. Cheers. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for being here.
Tonight, as everyone assembles around the table eating pasta and salad, they talk about their biggest worry, a new epidemic among young gay men who are not taking the threat of AIDS seriously.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about safe sex because now there are drugs. They don't see people dying. They don't see people sick. I mean,
no, but do you remember how we were back then? I mean, you know, people were not having sex. People would stop having sex. People were celibate for years because they were so frightened, you know. It was a completely different atmosphere. It was a completely different time. AIDS does not equal death anymore.
Right.
That's the bottom line.
Yeah, yeah.
And it used to equal death. Yeah.
But for these men, the idea is bittersweet. They cannot forget. Friends, lovers, a whole generation are gone. felled by the epidemic, says Drew, who shows me a small blue and white ceramic jar. In it, some of Archie's ashes, which have been with Drew for 13 years now.
These are they. At the time he died, when he was cremated, his parents insisted that his remains be sent to Colorado, and they have a grave site there for him in a family plot. So when the can came back from the crematorium, I took some of my own because they wanted all of it, so I took some. So if they're listening, I have part of Archie in here. It's not, you know, it's just part.
Shortly after Archie died, Drew took some of the ashes and buried them in a frozen lake in Minneapolis where the two had studied and performed in a theater company. But as for the rest of the ashes, Drew says he simply hasn't found the right place yet.
Probably I have a hard time letting go. In general in my life, it's hard for me to let go of things. And I'm probably, in some way, it's the last kind of step to letting Archie go, probably symbolically.
Drew says he will find a place for Archie's ashes. Perhaps a part of Colorado, which Archie loved. Or maybe the Irish Sea, where the two had last traveled and relished their time together. Patricia Namond, NPR News, San Francisco.